Hello, my name is Simon Ward, and I would like to welcome you to the Triathlon Coach podcast. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic champions and covering all distances from sprint to Ironman. Now it's my goal in this weekly 30-minute podcast to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. So as I've already said, we've got just 30 minutes, so let's get rolling with today's guest. Hey folks, welcome back. Well, we have a fantastic guest joining us all the way from the United States today. His name is Nathan Turner, and I'd like to firstly welcome him to the show. So welcome, Nathan. Thank you for joining us. It's a Sunday morning where you are, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, thanks. It's been a while. We've been talking about getting together, and so I'm pretty excited to finally get a chance to talk with you.
Well, I think, Nathan, that our first email conversation was way back in March, so that's just over 6 months it's taken it to get together, so I'm pretty certain it's going to be worth the wait. But most people that are listening to this show, unless they're real keen Instagram followers, will probably not have heard of you. You know, some of my guests recently have been Bob Babbitt and Mike Riley and Phil Maffetone. And they are well-known names. And so probably my guests that come on regularly be thinking, why have I chosen to talk to this guy called Nathan Turner? You're based in Colorado, is that right?
Yep, I'm right downtown Denver, Colorado.
Okay, so why am I choosing to talk to this guy from Denver, Colorado, who you've never heard of? Well, I'll tell you why. In 2012, Nathan Turner weighed 260 pounds, okay? And now, in 2018, he's on a journey to complete all of the 70.3 Ironman branded events in North America. Okay. So what I wanted to ask Nathan was just how do you get to be 260 pounds in the first place? And then how do you turn yourself from that guy to a triathlete competing regularly in 70.3 events? So we're going to dig into that now. So Nathan, that's my first question is, how did you come to be 260 pounds?
Yeah, so it's not a proud moment, right? Unfortunately, but the reality is it's a lot like everybody else's story where, you know, you just don't really understand what you're eating. You're overeating. I wasn't exercising. It wasn't a lack of not caring. You know, there was a lot of self-esteem issues going on as I was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I remember seeing a picture at one point with me and my wife and her family. They did your families always get together. They'll do like this one family photo thing. Right. And I remember looking at everybody in the photo and then looking at me and going, wow, I've really kind of blown up. And it was kind of a mental game, I guess, at that point of, I got to do something here. I have a father who's bigger and, so I don't have the greatest genes in the world per se. And, so it's one of those things where I got to kind of keep an eye on it. And if you don't keep an eye on it, then you just blow up. And really it was just, I was eating a lot of fast foods. I don't cook a whole lot. I still don't cook a whole lot. But I've learned, you know, you don't have to cook a whole lot in order to figure out what to still eat. You know, you can still eat salads and things like that. Whereas before it was just like, hey, I'm not going to cook tonight. So, what kind of fast food should we go grab on the way home or things like that? And just caught up. I was 203 pounds when my wife and I got married. And by 2012, that was 5 years later, I was, almost 265. So, that's 60 pounds in a matter of 5 years. And nothing really changed other than I wasn't doing anything. I was just not paying attention.
I guess your wife liked cuddly Nathan, hey?
Yeah, she was fine with it. She always tells me now I'm too skinny. I would tell you I'm still not even close to where I should be. She's fine with it. My wife is amazing. She doesn't seem to really care too much about that stuff. But at the same token, I think she's happier now that just knowing that I'm healthy.
Yeah. So interesting there that you 260 pounds. So how tall are you, Nathan?
So I'm 6'3". You guys are gonna have to do the metric conversions.
260 is probably about, 100, 110 kilos, 100, maybe right. 120 kilos. Yeah. 110, 120 kilos. So that's still pretty big. I mean, you'd have been on the horizon for an NFL team, wouldn't you, at that weight, I guess? 6'3" and 260.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a had something going for me there.
I can completely connect with that thing about the photograph. I had some, I had a personal training business about 10 or 15 years ago. And one of the ladies came to me and she was in a, she was in floods of tears one morning. And she was quite a large lady, but she'd been working really well. And she said, I really must lose the weight now. You know, I've got to make a start. We'd been training and she was getting fitter, but she wasn't really making any headway into losing weight. And they'd been on holiday and her husband had taken a photograph of her walking around the pool. And she, when they were looking at the photographs afterwards, she said, why have you taken a photograph of another woman? And he said, that's not another woman, that's you. And at first she refused to believe it was her because she didn't think she was that big. And then when she looked at him more closely, she realized that the summer dress that the lady was wearing was hers and the children in the foreground were hers. And therefore it must have been her, but it took some convincing. But that was an epiphany moment for her, a real epiphany, you know, actually seeing it there in well, not black and white, but full color. And, you know, she made massive gains from that point. So was that the same for you on seeing that photograph?
Yeah, you know, it was very similar. You know, I had my previous job right before this one too. You know, there's a couple things that played into, you know, enough's enough. And, you know, seeing that photo was kind of like, oh, God, this is bad. That was probably in the fall of 2011. And at the time, my job was actually, I was doing a lot of public speaking. So I was facilitating operation strategy at manufacturing plants around the world. And part of that was getting up in front of, you know, groups of 10, 20, 30, you know, sometimes up to 60 or 80 people and teaching them, training. And I remember getting to a point where I'd be up in front of them. And if I ever got nervous or I would feel like, you know, people are looking at me weird, I'd start sweating. Right. So it became like a self-conscious thing for me. I started, you know, after seeing that and realizing, God, I'm just kind of a big guy and I'm just not comfortable with it. I don't like, you know, I've never been one of those people that really wants like the attention. I'm okay when I'm in small groups one-on-one, but when it's in a big focus group kind of a thing, I tend to kind of freeze up a little bit. And, you know, I'm good when I'm in my element, you know, when I was teaching and all that. But as soon as I, you know, get a tough question or something like that, and you can tell people are kind of starting to stare at you. And I don't know, there was a mental thing and it's really hard to explain, but, you know, I'd start sweating really bad. I'd get really nervous. I'd start getting really self-conscious. And, you know, it just kind of came mentally, it was like, God, I got to do something different because this is just, it's not working. It's starting to affect my, you know, my personal mental health, if you will, as far as my self-conscious. And it's really starting to affect my job even. So that's kind of when it really started to turn around. And I just had to make the life decision, I guess you could say. Triathlon, okay. I'll tell you this. Triathlon was never on the horizon, though.
Well, that was my next question, actually. So you're 260 pounds and you decide you're going to lose some weight. So, where did the triathlon bit come from? You know, was that you say it wasn't on the horizon? So at what point did that enter into the challenges you were setting yourself when losing weight?
So when I, you know, it came to the end of the year and end of 2011, I basically, you know, everybody makes a New Year's resolution, and, you know, 95% of those New Year's resolutions are never, you know, seen through to the end, right? Like that's just everybody does it because they do it and nobody ever falls through. Well, I made one and my goal was, you know, I wanted to get down to around 220. You know, it wasn't anything terribly crazy. I'm thinking 40 pounds, you know, I can do that in a year, right? I didn't know how, I didn't know what I was going to do to get there. I didn't have any real plans. I just said, that's the goal. I don't care. We'll figure it out. So I actually started on Weight Watchers because that at least would kind of start to teach me about food and what foods I should and shouldn't eat. And if I'm going to eat certain types of foods, how much of that food can I eat? And so it was really, you know, I'm one of those people. So I'm an engineer by trade. And so I like data and I like to know exactly what's going on, but yet I don't always understand everything. So if I can have the numbers and I can have the data part of it, then I can kind of understand, but I don't understand all the, you know, nuances of, you know, why broccoli is good compared to, you know, something else, you know, but I can understand the numbers. So I started doing that. I probably got myself down by probably about April of 2012. I got down to, it was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 235, 240 just by doing that. I wasn't working out at all yet. I wasn't doing anything. It was strictly just dieting, basically. Got down to a little bit of a decent weight. And I think it was around May of that year. I had a close friend of mine that I was working with that wanted to do, I don't know if you guys have in the UK, the mud runs or, you know,
Yeah, we have those, yep.
Okay. So we did one of these mud runs where I had never done any race. I'd never done anything like that, but it was a team thing. And it was more, you know, hey, okay, we're going to run through mud and go over obstacles, and hell, we'll walk every now and then if we have to. And I'm thinking, I could do that. That's easy. It was only a 5K. So I started I got a gym membership then, because I had about a month and a half or so to prepare for it. So I got a gym membership, started running. I remember trying to run my first mile, and I think I got about a quarter of a mile in and just thought I was going to die. And this is after I'd already lost, I guess I had 20 or 25 pounds. And I remember just walking and thinking, well, you know, it's not a big deal. I'll just walk, you know, it's in the mud. And then the people I was going with, they weren't like the most fit people in the world either. They were, you know, we just all wanted to go and have a good time. And so I kind of got myself to a point where I could go have fun and do it. And we showed up to the race day and we did the race, and it was like 30 degrees outside and freezing cold. And I never had so much fun in my life. And it was so cool that I came back the day after and I started looking for more mud runs around, you know, Colorado area. And I found one, and I went back to the girl that invited me to do this one. I said, hey, look, I got another one. Do you want to do another one? It was like 3 or 4 months later. I said, we could do train and whatever. And she came back and said, well, I'll do that if you do a triathlon with me. And I started scratching my head. I just laughed at her. I said, yeah, no, thanks. I'm good. That's a hard pass. You know, I'm thinking I can run, walk a 5K, but I never really swam. I mean, I've swam as a kid and everything, but I've never swam competitively. I didn't even own a road bike. And the fact of actually running to just run, I'd never done. It got to the point where she kept hounding and hounding, and, you know, we're still a couple months out from the mud run. I finally said, all right, you know what? I'll do it. And it was a sprint triathlon. It wasn't anything crazy. And, so I did it. And there's one thing to know about me is I'm a super, super competitive person just by nature. I've always been pretty competitive with myself more than anybody else. You know, I was a golfer in college and everything. So it's always been more of an individual sport in my world, more so than team sports. Team sports, I played a ton of that too, but I've always just been really competitive with myself. So I took the challenge on with her. I said, okay, fine. So we did the mud run. Like, during all this time, I started actually going to gyms and training, and I got myself down going into my first sprint triathlon, somewhere around 210 pounds, 215 pounds. Went, did the race. I actually went out and bought like the cheapest road bike I could find just so I had something to ride, and did the race and absolutely fell in love with it. Never looked back the very next year. So that was my first year. That was 2012, where I did one sprint. So that's, you know, I guess you could say it was my first year of triathlon, if you will. But going into 2013, I signed up for 4 or 5 more local triathlons, including my first half Ironman. And it's been a life changer ever since. I mean, so it's been I've never done a mud race after that again. I just stuck with triathlon.
So let's go back then, Nathan, right to the very start. You were 260 pounds before you, and then you'd lost 30 or 40 within 3 months. So that's pretty good going. Before you started all of this exercising, did it ever occur to you now to get a medical checkup to make sure you're okay, having been that way, or did you just sort of literally dive in headlong and go for it and see what happened?
Yeah, I definitely just dove in. I have not done any medical checks to this date. I've only done one since, and that was just when I had to go in for some other issues that I had going on, some health stuff. And but yeah, I did the time. I don't know that I would recommend that necessarily. I've always been pretty athletic, so I've played sports my entire life. I was still playing softball even when I was 260. I was on a basketball league when I was 260. I mean, I was still playing. I was still active. I was eating everything in sight, and I was playing, you know, basketball once a week, right? So it wasn't like anything crazy. But yeah, no, I didn't do anything. And even to this day, I probably don't do it enough to keep track of it, to be honest with you.
Cool. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people go, right, well, I'm going to do a triathlon when I'm fit enough to do this, or when I've done that, or I must make sure I've got this bike. I love the attitude that you decided you were going to do with a race, and you didn't, you're not really done any swimming, and you didn't have a bike, and you just entered it and then sorted it out from there. Sort of like setting yourself a burning platform, really.
Yep.
Which is contrary to how most people go about things. So, I like that attitude to just get going on it. And, clearly you just like to grab life with both hands and give it a good shake, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, that's been one thing I've learned in this whole journey is that, you know, I always like to keep those races out in front of me. So every year, like, I've already planned out most of next year. As long as I can keep them in front of me, that's part of, you know, from a weight perspective, you know, because if I stop, it's interesting. I'll go into the winter months and I'll gain 10, 15, 20 pounds almost instantly. But then I'll burn it right off at the beginning of the year because the training hits hard and I know what I'm doing now a little bit better. But that's it's as long as I can keep those races out in front of me, I've learned that the weight can stay off me. And so that's been kind of my goal.
Okay. You mentioned that you started off with Weight Watchers, but you were more about the numbers. Since you started that journey then back in 2012, what have you done differently about your nutrition? Has there been any particular, I mean, triathletes love talking about low carb, high fat, or being a vegan, or, you know, following a paleo. Have you followed a particular philosophy or style of nutrition? Have you taken it upon yourself to learn a bit more about what you're eating, or are you just still doing it by the numbers?
I'm still a little bit more by the numbers. I don't do Weight Watchers to a T anymore. I don't really follow it. One thing I've learned that Weight Watchers was great when I wasn't working out. And now that I'm doing the type of training that I'm doing now where, you know, I'll be working out a couple times a day, or, you know, like today when I get off the phone with you, I've got a 3-hour bike ride to go do. Weight Watchers just doesn't work because the goal of Weight Watchers is for you to lose weight. And they do that by kind of calorie count. And so they'll be cutting calories, they'll be cutting carbs, they'll be cutting all those kinds of things. Well, those are things I need for fuel for what I'm doing. So I don't necessarily follow. What I try to follow is what I learned from it, which is what are the types of foods that you can kind of eat in excess without really gaining a lot of weight. So there's a lot of things inside Weight Watchers, and they do this for a reason, not because there's no calories or there's no sugars or things like that in fruit and vegetables and whatever, but you can eat those, and you can eat those at 0 points. So if you have 30 points in a day that you're allowed to use, you can eat unlimited veggies, you can eat unlimited fruits, you can eat unlimited salad, that kind of stuff, right? And so I've learned that, you know, when I'm hungry or I need snacks or I need stuff like that, I try to go for those kinds of things first.
Nathan, just repeat what those foods were then. I didn't quite catch that one.
Yeah, so it's things like your fruits and vegetables. So, you know, apples and pears and bananas, they have zero point counts in Weight Watchers, right? Things like, you know, your vegetables, broccolis, carrots, celery, that kind of stuff. They're all 0 point counts. So when I get the itch for a snack, that's the kind of stuff I start to try to reach for now, you know, that kind of stuff in salads. Whereas before, you know, I'd be reaching for a bag of potato chips or, you know, string cheese or that kind of stuff. So it's just I don't follow any diet. I'm not like any other. The way I look at it is I still want to have fun in my life. And so if you want to be on a diet your whole life, go for it. That's not really my idea of a ton of fun. The amount of working out and training that I'm doing now is enough that I can kind of maintain what I need to maintain. I can even cut weight pretty fast now when I need to, because I know how to. So I think that's my biggest thing I would tell somebody that's just getting into this is that, you know, figure out like learn how your body works. Learn what your body needs as far as how you need to cut calories or cut carbs or cut meats or whatever it is that your body functions or relates to. Because I don't think it works the same for every single person. And it also depends on the amount of training and workouts and things like that that you might be doing. But for me, I don't have a specific diet. I just know what works for me, and I kind of stick to those things. Pretty basic stuff.
I mean, I've done quite a few interviews with, I don't know if you've heard Phil Maffetone. He's big on the low carb, high fat, and Brad Cairns and all the guys from Primal Endurance. Professor Paul Larson, who was on last week, is a big low carb, high fat advocate and done a lot of research. But what you get from all of the scientists is still this, you know, everybody's an individual and each person has to figure out what works for them, which is what you've said there. And I can connect with that whole attitude that I'm training hard, but if I have to really be knuckling down with my nutrition, life's not going to be much fun. And therefore, what's the point? I mean, the Brownlees, who I'm sure you've heard of in England, they've won Olympic medals, but they have a fairly similar approach to their nutrition, is that if I have to train 40 hours a week and I have to really be strict on my nutrition, that does take the fun out of it. So, we're perhaps not playing that game, but I'm interested. Sure. I've not really followed Weight Watchers or looked into it too much, and I'm always interested that, you know, certainly vegetables, I can see why they'd have 0 points, but when you've got things like fruits that have got lots of sugar in, etc., you know, that those have still got 0 points because clearly they've still got quite a lot of calories in there. But I guess that's the Weight Watchers philosophy.
And I think it's the way that they do it on Weight Watchers, and you can kind of read up on it. But the way that they try to do it is they're trying to promote that food, right? So it's trying to promote fruits and vegetables over bags of chips and crackers and, you know, from a snack food kind of mindset. So that's why I say, like, you know, I know that, you know, inside fruits, there's a ton of sugar, right? Especially apples and things like that. But that's probably a way better sugar option than going and grabbing like a package of fruit snacks, right? You know, or something like that.
I can understand the logic in that completely. Yeah.
So it's an interesting, that's where I say you kind of got to play with it from yourself and realize, will it even work for me? And it works great for me. It's been super easy. It's a very intuitive type of program, but to the point where I'm at now, there's no diet plan. It's just eat what I know is the right things to eat. Be smart about it.
What weight are you at now then, Nathan, just so we can gauge your progress?
Right now I'm at about 200 pounds, like 201, 202, somewhere right in there. The lowest I've been when I was really going gung ho for like 2 years ago, I did my second full Ironman, and that was a year I was really, really going hard at it. I think I got down to right around 185, which is about as light as I can possibly get before it gets really hard to maintain at my size.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to envisage what, I mean, 185, that's about 85 kilos, I would think. So, and that's 185 kilos of 6'3" is, pretty rangy, I would think.
It's definitely not easy for me to maintain those levels for sure. I could do it, but it's like I said, that's where the dieting and that the constant kind of push has to happen. And like I said, I didn't mind doing it then because I really had some pretty lofty goals at the time for that particular race, and so I was really pushing hard. But my normal weight, like when I'm in the middle of race season, you know, I'm obviously tailing off. I've got a race coming up here next week, and then that's it for the year. My normal weight would be right around 195 or so is kind of normal. So I'm about 5 pounds over right now, but nothing too crazy.
Okay, so that's the diet covered. We might come back to that in a little bit. But when you took on your first goal of doing a triathlon, then, and you said you'd not really done much swimming and you didn't have a road bike, how did you start preparing for that? Or did you just rock up to it like you did with your mud run and see what happened?
I guess for the swimming side of it, I got a gym membership and I just started trying to figure it out. That was a real challenge because, you know, learning how to breathe and swim, I'd never really done laps in a pool. So I didn't get anybody to train me. I watched a lot of YouTube videos. It was interesting if I recall, so 2012 would have been the year of, Michael Phelps over there in Beijing, if I'm not mistaken. And,
London.
Was it London? Yeah. Okay. There you go.
2012 was our big year in the UK.
Yeah, there you go. And, I remember watching him swim, or they were showing some replays of him swimming. And this is what I was trying to teach myself. And I remember watching some of the distance swimmers do like how they kick. And I was just watching these Olympians on TV, and I'm like, huh, look how they're kicking, look how their stroke goes. And I just started doing a lot of research and I started trying to figure it out. And that's literally how I taught myself how to swim, was just watching TV, watching the Olympians, doing YouTube videos, and then just kind of trial and error in the pool. The hardest thing for me was trying to figure out how to time my breaths, and really trying to figure out how to get the endurance in the pool. It's an interesting, you know, running, you know, there's a constant breathing factor there. When you're biking, you know, you can coast for a second if you need to, but in the pool, it's like, you know, you're holding your breath while you're actually, you got some of the endurance and the push going through. So that was a hard one for me. It was the swimming more than anything. But after just spending a lot of time going back and forth, I kind of figured it out. And then on the bike side, I've always been a rider. I've had a mountain bike, but I've never had a road bike. So I've never road biked in my life. I've only ever kind of ridden in the mountains. And ever since moving out to Colorado, I had not. So it was about, I don't know, we had been here for 5 years. And I hadn't rode a bike in 5 years at that point. And so it was, you know, the old saying, you know, it's like riding a bike, right? I mean, it wasn't like I had to figure out how to ride. It was more just I didn't know how to go fast. I didn't know anything about being in a narrow position. I didn't even know anything. I had never owned a pair of bike shorts. So I mean, it was a lot of simple things, I guess you could say, that I just kind of had to learn kind of on my own. And I did the first 2 years I did completely on my own, just kind of winging it. So I got my, but that was about it.
Going back to your swimming then, I guess that there'll be an awful lot of our listeners listening to this conversation and nodding their head going, yep, I can get by with that, mate. Yeah, I've tried to do it myself. Yes, I've watched the YouTube videos. Yeah, took me a while learning out how to, figuring out how to breathe properly and stop myself from drowning. And, you know, so I don't think you're alone in that one. I think where you are you actually in Denver, or are you closer to Boulder where you live?
I'm right downtown Denver, like right in the city.
Ah. Yeah, because, I mean, if you go sort of an hour up the road, you've got Boulder, and there's an awful lot of triathlon coaches and triathletes and coaching setups up there that could help you out. And I'm not sure what the situation's like in Denver, but you're in the right place, really, aren't you, for picking up the skills from the right people?
I do have a coach now.
Yeah, who have you? Yeah. Do you use any of the coaches in the Colorado area now then?
Yep. I actually work with D3 Multisport. The head coach, Mike Ritchie, he was USAT Coach of the Year several years in a row.
I know Mike quite well, in fact. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, so I've been with them for every year but my first year. So I've been doing this for 6 years or so. And when I always say my first year, I always count it as my first full year, not the year I did the little sprint. But so, yeah, I've done it. I've been with them ever since. I'm probably one of their longest lasting members, I guess you could say, that they've had in a while. So I've been with them for quite some time now.
One of the coaches who works with D3 is a gentleman called Simon Butterworth. Do you know Simon?
Yep, I do. Yep.
Yeah, Simon's a friend of mine. I was with him a couple of weeks ago in Kona. I've known him for quite a while, and in fact, we came over to the Training Peaks conference last year in Boulder, and stayed with Simon. Rode up to the reservoir on for the 70.3 they had there in Boulder, and I stood and chatted with Mike and his team while we watched all the athletes go past. Were you doing that race?
Was that last year?
Yeah, 2017.
Yep, I was there. I was racing.
Ha! We may actually have met each other, Nathan, without realizing. How about that?
We might have, because I even I spent some time at the D3 tent for a while there too. So we probably were. We probably did.
Well, if there was a couple of limeys that were there chatting away and drinking Mike's beer, that would have been me and my partner.
Perfect.
Yeah, well, I know Mike and Simon, and that the D3 setup's excellent. So you're in good hands there, and they've certainly steered you along nicely. Because 2018, let's go back to that little goal you've got of completing all the 70.3s. How many is there in total that you've got to do? Because I guess they keep adding a couple more each year around and about the place, don't they? But how many have you done? How many have you done now, and how many have you got left to do?
So I've done 19, and out of the 19, 17 of them are individual, I guess you could say. I've done Boulder a couple times because it's local, but the rest have all been one-offs. And how many do I have left? It's a great question. Every time I try to count, they add more. And I think they have a total of somewhere right around 42, 43 last time I checked. So, you know, I've got another, somewhere in the 22, 23, 24 range to go. What's always challenging is they'll take some off every year, and then every year they'll add a couple. So out of the 19 that I've done, they've discontinued three of them. So I've got three that are no longer even there. And then they've added over the last few years, I don't know how many they've added. They've probably added 10 new ones over the last 5 years or so. But that's fine. For me, that's perfect. I love it that they keep adding them, because that gives me another challenge to just kind of keep going after them. And I try to do five or six a year, and clip them off as quickly and as many of them as I can.
Let's go back to your early triathlon training then, Nathan. At 260 pounds, I had a couple of personal training clients I mentioned that were a little on the heavy side. One of the guys was probably about the same weight as you, and I know he used to get awful problems when we walked. He didn't want to run. He was. Obviously, he's a really good tennis player, actually, but he didn't want to run because he got chafing around his inner thighs and around under his arms when he moved too quickly. So he just felt uncomfortable. Did you get any of those little things that happened to you when you first started? And did you sort of start to question your goals at that point?
I never really had anything like that. You know, I've always been, and I guess it kind of comes down to the person, right? There's different things that'll bother different people, and maybe things like that would bother some. And for me, what bothers me is the knowing I can't do it frustrates me. So I don't really settle for I can't do it. I try to figure out how I can do it. And something like that, I don't know that it would slow me down so much as just try. I would try to find alternative ways around it. And I think the biggest thing for me that I've struggled with was breathing. And really, you know, for me, that was just endurance. I had no endurance at the time. And the more I trained and the more I ran and the more I kind of started learning about, you know, interval training and, you know, endurance training and the differences between speed training and all those kinds of things, just kind of doing a lot of the research on my own. And then, you know, as we talked about D3, getting involved with them, you know, that all kind of started to snowball into me getting myself to a point where there wasn't really anything in my way that could stop me. My current world is, you know, I still struggle on the run coming off the bike in the heat. Now, when it's a cool temperature day, I have no problems. I can run pretty decent. I can hold my own. But when there's heat, I struggle, and I still struggle to this day. But it's never been, well, I'm not going to go do any of the hot races. It's always been, okay, so what's the salt intakes that I need to do? What's the water intakes? How many calories do I need to have? Mm-hmm. How do I keep myself cool in the race? And that's kind of what I've been focused on, because any way you look at it, like I said, my goal is to get all the 70.3. So I got to figure it out. And I think that's kind of the mentality that I love about triathlon, is that no matter what, if you're going to do this stuff, then you're going to have to figure out how to overcome some of these hurdles, because it's going to make it a long road ahead if you can't figure it out, or you don't have the passion to try to figure it out.
Did you pick up any other injuries? You know, I mean, starting running from zero background at 260 pounds, it's going to put a bit of a strain on your body. Did you get anything like that that sort of derailed your progress a little, or have you managed to steer clear of those?
For the most part, I've managed to steer clear. I have had some knee issues. I've had some knee issues, and I've had some ankle issues. The big part is, you know, again, being, even when I get down to my lightest weight, you know, 185 pounds, even at the very, very, very lightest, is still bigger than most people that are in triathlon. Yeah. You know, I always laugh because, you know, I'm 6'3", I'm 205 pounds, and I'm almost still qualified for the Clydesdale, you know,
yes,
group. And so, and yet I'm competing against guys that are, you know, I remember my very first time I got on a podium, I was at third place, and I was taller than the guys that were on second and first, and they were on the podium and I was still taller than them. And so, I mean, I remember kind of, you know, I'm just, it's not a big person's world necessarily, but then, you know, you look at Jan Frodeno and people like that, and you can kind of argue the point that it absolutely is a big person's world. And no, I haven't, you know, my ankles and my knees, are a little bit probably more susceptible because of the weight of my body. But what I've done with my coaching and stuff like that is we've worked through a lot of different shoe selections, insert selections. I've run with braces, things like that. And then I've started doing a lot more strength training around my legs and knees and things. And doing so has helped eliminate a lot of the issues that I've had in my knees. So it's really just, again, there's a lot of things you just kind of got to learn throughout this process that I've learned through trial and error, because I don't have any of the, you know, I'm not a runner, a cyclist, or a swimmer by background.
Yeah, well, I go back to that point you made about triathlon's not a big person sport. You're absolutely right there. For the people at the pointy end of any age group, you know, mostly it's the skinny endurance athletes that come through. However, that doesn't mean the sport's excluded to bigger people, you know, in the same way you could play American football if you wanted. If you weighed 140 pounds, you'd probably get roughed up a bit, but you could still go and play. But, you know, there's nothing to stop bigger athletes doing triathlons. And, you know, I love Absolutely. It when I'm commentating and we get the guys come through that have lost 100 pounds in order to make it onto the start line. And, you know, just sort of ignoring all of the common conventions and just getting on with it and doing it. And that's the most important thing, is sport should be inclusive and not restricted to certain types. Although, like you say, you're unlikely to win your age group in one of the high end competitions, because there's always going to be some skinny little bloke that's faster than you on the run. But that shouldn't stop you trying.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, And I'm still determined. I still think that I've got potential. I can get up there. And, you know, I just got to find the right race and the right speeds. And the first time I went and did a race where I think it was my mom that came with me, and her comment to me was, she was, you know, she just said, you know, I'm so shocked at the size of different people, meaning exactly what you just said. You know, it could be somebody super small, someone really tall, someone big, someone little. And she's like, but yeah, everybody's out there. They're all racing on the exact same course. They're all racing in the exact same conditions. And they're all have the exact same end game in mind, which is get across the finish line. And so it's absolutely a everybody's sport.
Have you ever come across Daryl Haley at all?
I have not.
Daryl Haley, I met Daryl. Oh, it must be, it might be 15 or 20 years ago now, but he got one of the ambassador places to race in Kona. He was, I think he played for the Patriots or the Packers. He got a Super Bowl medal. He was a defensive player, linebacker. Okay. 330 pounds, 6 foot six. Huge guy.
Yeah.
And he got this place, and I met him in Lanzarote where he was doing the race. That's like the hardest Ironman in the world. Lots of hills, lots of wind, not suited to big guys really, but certainly not suited for somebody of his size. And I was chatting with him, and I said, what was it like? And he said, well, my first race, before I got to Kona in the February, I got told I'd got a place. I'd only ever swum in the neighbor's pool when I jumped in after the football. I'd only ridden my bike because I stole it. And he said, I only used to run on for the scrimmage. And then afterwards, he used to have oxygen and sit on the sidelines. And Wendy Ingram taught him how to swim, and he managed to get through the Ironman. And anyway, he was doing this press conference in Lanzarote, and somebody said, what are you going to be like on the hills, Dowell? He said, well, I'll probably have to walk up some of those hills. But if you see a big black shadow enveloping the whole land, he says, that's me coming downhill behind you. So you better get out of the way. And then... And then somebody else asked him, well, what do you eat, Daryl? And he says, everything. So when I stop at the aid station, whereas most people stop for just a glass of water and a gel or some pretzels, he said, I stop for a picnic. I mean, he was hilarious. But again, you know, he wasn't the ideal build. He said, I'm a big black bloke. People like me don't swim. But I learned to swim, man. And, you know, I'm testimony to the fact that if you put your mind to it, you can do these things. And I liked his attitude. Sounds like it's very similar to yours, which is great. And there will be people that listen to this podcast who think, well, I can't do this and I can't do that. And I guess you're like the bumblebee, you know, you've just not found out you can't do it, have you? So you've carried on doing it.
Well, I would always encourage people to give it a shot. If you find out you can't do it, then ask yourself, how can I do it? And, you know, that's kind of the mentality that I always go for it and say, there's a lot of stuff out there in this world that I can't do, but somebody's doing it, which means I can do it too. And then you just got to figure out how to do it.
Well, there's a guy in England, big muscular guy. You may have heard of him. He's called Ross Edgley. You'll probably be able to find some references to him on the internet today, because he is the first person who circumnavigated Great Britain by swimming it. It's about 2,000 miles. He set off in June. He didn't touch dry land, so he basically stayed aboard a little boat that they had and then swam. He started out by doing triathlons, towing a tree, towing a big log, and then he started calling them triathlons. And he doesn't look like a triathlete at all. He's not a particularly good swimmer, but he's become the first person to swim around the United Kingdom ever. And they were saying this morning that it's something that you probably find never gets done again. It's just so mental. So it can be done, you know, just you have a mad idea and you chase it, don't you?
That's it. That's it. Yeah, that's crazy.
Let me just ask you, you talked about your shoe selection and how you changed that. Have you found a particular type of shoe that suits a big guy like you?
Yeah, for running, so I've kind of bounced around. You know, I've tried the Hoka, I've tried the Saucony. I've actually kind of finalized on running shoes.
Yep.
And so I've pretty much been wearing those for probably the last 2 years. Only thing I don't like about those, so I don't have any affiliation with any of these, so, but the only thing I don't like about those is they wear pretty quick, because they have those little the little cloud cushions, I guess you could call them, whatever they call them. So they wear pretty fast, but they seem to fit my foot type and my run stride pretty well. So that's what we've kind of settled on, and those have been the ones that so far have saved my knees. But it's interesting when they start to wear, I can almost immediately feel it in my knees. And so I know it's always time to swap out shoes. But yeah, I've tried several brands. I've even tried Nike. And I just haven't had any luck until I got to the On running shoes.
Okay. And in terms of the rest of your kit then, what did you settle on for your wetsuit of choice?
So I use a Roka. I think it's the Roka Pro something or another. You'll learn that I don't ever remember any of this stuff. I just use it.
Okay.
But it's the Roka Pro. I can't remember what it's Pro 2 maybe or something like that. But I had multiple wetsuits before that. I have two TYR wetsuits that I used before that. And the Roka has been an awesome wetsuit in terms of. So I'm a big guy, so I have pretty broad shoulders. And so I've always had a hard time with wetsuits on my shoulders, kind of resisting my ability to actually swim. And I actually turned out to be a pretty decent swimmer, so I can hold my own for the most part in most of the swim courses. But I hate wearing wetsuits just because they are always very restrictive. But the Roka one's pretty thin up in the shoulders. And so that's helped quite a bit.
Okay. And now, I mean, obviously, the bike's the most important part of the triathlon. It's where you can make it the biggest amount of time. But I guess being a big guy, there'll be some bikes that didn't suit you. You know, did you find that some of them just weren't robust enough? And has it taken you a few choices to find the bike that suits your particular body type and riding style?
So I've been lucky. I went and just kind of tried several bikes. I've only owned one. In all these years, I did my first two seasons on a road bike, and it was that really cheap, junky one. I didn't really get my first tri bike until I don't know, third or fourth year in. I just went and tried a bunch of different bikes at a local bike shop and just kind of sat on them and said, "Yeah, it feels about right. I don't know, this one feels okay." And I ended up settling on the Quintana Roo, the Kiwa, and it's been my go-to ever since.
That's good. QR's my bike of choice at the moment. They had some lovely bikes out in Kona. They've got some nice paint jobs. They've got a new wetsuit out, which if the Roka one doesn't last, you could try out. They've got some really nice designs on those, quite thin around the shoulders and the upper body as well.
I'll have to check that out. I know that's what they were originally. I think that's what they originally were before they were a bike company, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Bikes way back when. It was Dan Enfield from Slow Twitch who started that company. Then they sort of struggled for a bit, and then Peter Hurley bought the company a few years ago. It's in with Lightspeed as well. So I'm doing a bit of work with them in the UK. They're making some nice bikes now.
I have a QR Illicito, and it's awesome. I love it. I've had it for, like I said, four years or so now at this point, and it's been a great bike for me.
Wow, that's good. Good. You definitely an advocate, though, coming back to what we said about just getting it done and not worrying too much about the equipment, it seems to me, which is refreshing these days amongst the world of triathletes who operate on bling and who's got the nicest bike. So let's before we wrap up then, Nathan, take us through what would be a typical week of training for you, because I know you've got quite a heavy work schedule as well, don't you? You're in quite early, and you're in your office for quite a few hours each week.
Yeah, so yeah, I work anywhere between at a small week would be 50 hours, upwards of 60 to 70 hours a week, and so my training schedule is probably close to 12 hours a week, roughly maybe 10 to 12, depending on the week and depending on where we're at in the season. So it's not crazy. The hard part is just getting it in throughout during Monday through Friday. Saturday and Sunday is pretty easy. You know, I can make the time up there. But what I try to do is I usually have 2 to 3 swims a week. I'll try to do those in the morning before I go into work. And then I'll have 3 to 4 runs a week, all varying from, you know, from 30 minutes to, you know, some endurance runs on the weekend where there might be 90 minute sessions or so. And then I'll have another 3 to 4 bike rides in a week. And then throughout the season portion of it, I do very little like weight training. It's more stretching and abs and things like that. And then now as we're getting into the off season after this week, we'll start backing off a little bit on the running. We'll back off a little bit on the biking. We'll increase a little bit on the weight training and things like that. So And then the hours will come down from 10 to 12 to probably 7 or 8 a week.
Do you find that it's better for you to do more swimming because of your your size and easier if you do a little less running?
You know, it is. I get bored sometimes when I'm swimming if I don't have the right types of programs or if I'm not out there. You know, again, I'm competitive, so I like to know like there's something for me to beat. So we do quite a bit of swimming. What we'll do usually every year is in January we'll swim almost every day to build up endurance, and so and then we'll taper back down to that like I said, that 2 or 3 times a week pace. But in January it's usually a daily swim session, and that's literally just to kind of jumpstart the body. But I don't do a ton of running in the off season. I will do, like I said, I'll probably do 20 miles at the most a week, and then the biking, though, I'll hit the biking pretty hard for the most part. I keep that. That's probably the only one that I'll actually maintain a lot of mileage still, even in the off season.
Do you have to do a lot of indoor riding in Denver in the winter? I guess it gets quite cold up there, doesn't it? At that altitude as well.
Yeah,
I know you have a lot of sunshine there, but I guess it's still quite cold.
Yeah, it's get cold. I'm debating whether I'm going to go out today or not. It's right now it's about 32 degrees, 34 degrees, somewhere in there. And I may just get my cover-ups on and go outside, but we'll see. So, yeah, when it gets to be really cold, it's definitely not fun riding outside, and I'll just ride indoors. But it seems like a lot of people are moving towards Zwift and things like that anyway, it seems. It's not too bad.
Yeah, I should imagine that D3 have got enough people to have their own little Zwift racing team, haven't they? With little sessions
probably.
Each week.
Probably. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So 2019 then, before we go, what's on your schedule for next year?
So next year so far, I've got the Wisconsin 70.3. I've got Atlantic City 70.3 and Mont Tremblant 70.3 up in Canada. And then I've got 3 or 4 more that I've got a laundry list that I've put together based on timing that I'm still trying to select from. But those 3 are already booked and ready to go. We've got so I started a new team this year. It was our first year. I'm doing it with Jeff Fairbanks. I don't know if you know who he is or not, but Team Triumph. And so next year we're planning on Atlantic City 70.3 to be a big team race. This year we had, I think, 15 of us out at Santa Rosa 70.3. So I'm trying to create a little bit more of that community vibe, too. Again, trying to get more people in and around the triathlon community. It's been pretty fun. It's a little bit more of a positive kind of mindset and just getting out and having some fun with racing.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit more about Team Triumph then? Apart from it being more of a community, is it a group of people based in Denver or are they from all over the U.S.?
They're from all over the U.S. We actually have a couple overseas. And the original goal was really Jeff and I kind of got together and we just wanted to donate our time to kind of build a team. You know, we've got sponsors like, you know, QR and Pioneer, and you know, we got some of the big names loaded up. Our goal was really we're donating our time to actually establish a team. And then create all of the community and talk and coordination around it. Jeff does all of the kit designs. We've been working with Zoot. Zoot is kind of one of our main sponsors as well. And so he does all the designs. They print all the kits. We're giving the team basically everything that they need as far as kits, hats, shirts, all that kind of good stuff. And then we try to meet up, like I said, for a couple races a year as a big group. And we have it's hand-selected. We don't do applications like most teams just because Jeff and I we're doing this on the side on our own time. And this year we got 50 members. It's been pretty fun. They're all, like I said, because they're hand selective, what makes it fun is they're all super social on social media and very active. And so it's been a pretty fun support group. You know, we announce every week who's racing, who's doing what, and everybody jumps in. And we've had some people actually fly out to watch other folks just race, just cheer them on. When I was in Arizona, we had a few fly up and drive up just to watch me race with a couple others. And that was pretty cool. So it's really just trying to create that community and that kind of camaraderie around the sport. You know, not everybody is out there trying to get a podium. You know, sometimes people are out there just trying to compete and have fun. And that's really kind of what this group's all about.
Okay. So Jeff Fairbanks is a surfer. Yeah. Ex-surfer. Is that right?
He's a
motocross racer.
Yep, he used to be a surfer. He used to be a motocross racer. He actually, I don't remember if it was 3 years ago, he did 21 half Ironmans in 21 days across the East Coast to kind of raise awareness and kind of for the sport. Ever since then, he's been kind of an advocate of triathlon, and he's really, really got into designing a lot of the kits and doing a lot of that kind of stuff. And so he and I met him when he was doing his 21 half Ironman across the East Coast. And ever since then, he and I have been friends, and we've been talking about doing this for some time now, and finally said, you know what, there's no team out there that's just based on some of this fun. And, you know, they all want their dues and costs and things like that. And, you know, some of them are marketing their brands. Well, we don't really have a brand. We're not a brand. You know, his name of the Triumph Project is, we just built off that and kind of went from there. And really, it's just all about having some fun and just being a kind of a close group of friends.
Brilliant. That sounds amazing. What we'll do, Nathan, is we'll put a link to that Triumph Project in the show notes, because I think didn't they do a little documentary about Jeff doing his 21 in 21.
He's actually got the official documentary is actually coming out at the end of this month, November 30th. It's a movie is being released about it, and or a movie, I don't know, documentary, whatever you call it, is being released November 30th. So we're all pretty excited about that. But yeah, that would be cool if you want to share that and people can check it out.
So where else can our listeners find out more about you and what you're up to, Nathan? I know you've got quite a healthy Instagram account that's running, so that will be a good start.
Yeah, so you can find me at the Tri Life. It would be the_tri_life on Instagram. That's probably the best place to find me. I respond to literally every single comment, every single question. I get a lot of people that ask about gear, or I get a lot of people that ask, how did you start? Or I get a lot of people that just want to, you know, ask for tips and advice on a race that they have coming up. And I have absolutely no problems. I love giving back to the sport. The sport's literally changed my life. Any questions or any comments or anything anybody ever wants to know, I would suggest they go there. And, you know, you don't have to follow me. That's fine. But if you have a question, I would love to just talk. I love talking sport.
So before you go, Nathan, then I'm going to put you on the spot now.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I should have prepped you for this one. But hey,
you didn't let me know this.
You just said you like to talk, and you've done a good job. So let's say there's a guy or a girl out there who wants to do triathlon. They're not quite sure where to get started. They haven't got much experience. Just your top three tips for them to get rolling. It's November now, so they've got plenty of time before 2019. They've always wanted to do it, but they're not sure where to start, and they're not that fit. Go for it. Top three tips.
So top tip would be go find a race that's short and easy. So find a sprint or something like that. Sprint distance triathlon, if you've never done one before, and just go sign up for it. That way it's marked out. It's on the calendar. You've got the target. The second tip would be, you know, if you're not already fit or you're not already working on anything, is I would tell you to go get a gym membership and just start running a little bit and sit on the bike a little bit and try to figure out what you're good at and what you're not. That way you can kind of, you know, where you need to go ask for help, or you know where you need to go research. It's really hard to tell somebody to just go start looking up everything when you may be fine at running or you may be fine at biking or whatever. So I would tell you, go play around with those at first, you know, over the next couple months. And then lastly, I would tell you, figure out why you're wanting to do this and figure out what that motivation strategy is for you. Like I said, for me, it's the sheer challenge of this sport that I love. I love being able to look at somebody and say, I'm a triathlete, and their immediate reaction is, you're crazy. To me, that always kind of makes me laugh a little bit on the inside. And so that's what motivates me, is just the challenge of the whole thing. So figure out why you want to do it. What's your motivation? That way you can build off of.
Perfect. So let just recap on there. Nathan's top three tips, if you just don't know where to get started: find a race, something short, something that you can get your teeth around. Get yourself a gym membership so you can get started and figure out where you need a bit of help, and then go find the help, and then work out what's your why. There's actually a book, I think it's Simon Sinek, which is What's Your Why. Have you read that one, Nathan?
I haven't, but we teach in some of my operation strategy, we always teach the what we call the WIFM, which is the what's in it for me, right?
And yeah.
that it's really that's really what drives everybody, right? Everybody in everything. That we use that at work, I use that for training, is really what's in it for me and why am I doing this? If you can't figure that out, then you probably shouldn't be doing it.
Well, that's a perfect way to finish the conversation, Nathan. So for listeners, that was Nathan Turner. So if you think you can't do it, Nathan was in your position just over 6 years ago. He's gone from 260 pounds sitting on a couch and eating just about anything that was put in front of him to trying to cross off all the 70.3 triathlons in the United States and North America. And in the process of doing so, he's got himself down to 200 pounds. He's now become an inspiration for all these people in Triumph Project. And he's just showing people the way to do it. You don't have to be good at this stuff. You just have to have a reason for doing something. So hopefully you've been able to listen to this conversation. Nathan's provided you with a little bit of inspiration today. Nathan, you've certainly inspired me. I've been in the sport for 30 years and I've met some inspiring people, but I love to meet new people. And, you know, you've certainly given me a little bit more thought, food for thought and some inspiration. So thank you very much for being on the conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Yeah, well, listeners, just before we say goodbye to Nathan, I just also like to say thank you for joining us today. As I said right at the beginning, you probably never heard of Nathan Turner, but now I guess you're going to want to look at his Instagram account and hopefully you'll be inspired by what he's done. We've got some more great guests coming up in the next few weeks, but as always, I'd like to thank you for dropping in to listen to this conversation. I know there's lots you could choose from, so I really appreciate you spending your time listening to this podcast, and I hope that we can justify that by giving you more good guests to listen to in the future. But from me and Nathan, it's goodbye from us. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll see you again soon with another great guests. Bye-bye for now. That wraps up this week's episode. I'd just like to say thank you for taking the time to listen to the conversation today, and I hope you learned at least one thing that you can put into practice in your training. Now, if this was your first time listening, please go back and listen to our previous episodes. I can guarantee that they will be just as good as you heard from today's guest. If you've listened to all the episodes so far, then thank you so much for continuing this learning journey with me. As you might be aware, reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so I would really appreciate it if you could leave a review and a rating on iTunes or Podbean. You could also follow me at the same time. I also have a free gift for you. In 30 years of competing in triathlon and 20 years of coaching, I've learned an awful lot from my own experiences and from some of the guests who have and will appear on this show. And I feel it's my duty, as I approach the latter stage of my coaching career, to share these with you. So I've put together 25 of my best training, racing and lifestyle strategies, and I've squeezed them down into just 2 pages of content. And in order to get hold of this, all you need to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send it right back out to you. You could also think about joining my Facebook community. It's called the Triathlon Coach Cafe. We've got over 2,300 members just like you, eager to find out more about how to improve their training and share their successes with people. It's free to join, but you will have to ask. So go along there, answer the questions, and then we'll even do a little video each week to answer your questions. Finally, if you want to make sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe using Podbean or iTunes. We release new episodes every Wednesday. So that's all for now. See you again next week, same time, same place.